Well, good morning. Hope everybody has had a good week. My name's Dean. I'm the lead pastor here at LifePoint. And it doesn't matter whether you are guests, friends, or family, we're thrilled that you're here with us. You're part of our online community today. Thanks for taking the opportunity. It could be a lot of places to invest in your spiritual life. Today, we are in week two of a series that we are calling Build. And the big idea of the series is that generosity builds a legacy. And so what we have been starting and are engaging in this series is looking at a two-year vision that God has given to us as the church, looking at neighbors, nations, and next generations. And as I think about that vision that God has kind of laid on our hearts, the reason that's important to us is because you and I have defaults, right? Without God in our lives, without knowing him, our default order of loves is kind of me, others, and then God. Now, if you're really a great person, you can flip those first two really without being a Christian, without being a believer. You can make it where it's others, me, God, right? But that's not Christianity any more than the first order is Christianity. And so what happens is that the right order is God, others, me. And so I have to fight my default order of loves, because what you see is that, Christian or not, my heart, right, says one thing. If you are a believer, I think we all want to be generous people, right? So my heart wants to be generous, but I've got these habits that are kind of stingy, right? And so my habits tend to fight my heart. And so hopefully in this series, what we're going to do is we're going to look at the realities that affect all of our lives. I thought maybe we'd start today just by taking a poll, just to show the differences between how we see things fiscally. Some of us are a little more conservative. Maybe some of us are a little more liberal in terms of our own personal lives. How many of you, whenever you pay your bills every month, you still get out paper and you write a paper check and you mail that paper check in? Yeah, a few of you. That's how you still pay your bills. Yeah. How many of you are like, what's a check? Like, some of you are like, I've never seen a check. How many of you are part of the latest trend where you just don't pay your bills? That's brand new. Brand new. Nobody's seen it. I mean, everybody has a certain view. And I think, so I'm part Scottish, and that maybe affects maybe our view. I don't know. A little bit. We're a little conservative in the way we do things. I remember when our kids were really little, they hated going to the grocery store. Hated going to the grocery store, except for one day a week. They loved going to the grocery store on Saturdays. Like, if we ever said we had to go to Kroger, they were like, yeah, you know why? Free samples. That's exactly right. I remember when they were little, one time they made up this little song, and the song was something like, we get to go to Kroger and get the free samples of the good food that mom and dad won't buy for us. I mean, like, they made up this little rhyme. So maybe that shows a little bit of our view. Last week, we started talking about Nehemiah, this character in the Old Testament who was the cupbearer to the king of Persia, had a cushy, comfortable life. Very trusted, very protected there, but he got news of what is going on 800 miles away in Jerusalem. The people there were left unprotected because 140 years prior, the walls around Jerusalem had been destroyed, and the people who lived there had fallen prey to bands of raiders who would come in and they would rape and pillage the people who were there. And so Nehemiah gets a conviction, he gets this burden for people, this holy discontent for people that he's never met, that live 800 miles away, people that in a place he's never been to before. And he goes to the king of Persia after praying about it for a number of days. And he asks the king of Persia, and God gives him favor with the king. And the king gives Nehemiah the modern equivalent of millions of dollars in timber and stone and gold and silver to go back to Jerusalem and to rebuild the walls around the city, not for just the sake of the people who live there, but for the sake of God's name among the nations. And so as Nehemiah goes about that process, he sets people in places around the wall and they begin to build. But Nehemiah is going to learn some lessons, and they are lessons that help us. I feel like last week I strongly challenged you to live personally in generosity, and you would be naive. I would be naive. Nehemiah was probably naive to think that whenever you want to take steps in generosity, that you're not going to have opposition. And so this morning, we're going to look at some of the opposition that Nehemiah faced in chapter 5. So if you have a copy of the scriptures, turn over there and look at Nehemiah chapter 5 and verse 1. Now there arose a great outcry of the people and of their wives against their Jewish brothers. For there were those who said, with our sons and our daughters, we are many, so let us get grain that we may eat and keep alive. And there were also those who said, we are mortgaging our fields, our vineyards, our houses to get grain because of the famine. And then there were those who said, we have borrowed money for the king's tax on our fields and our vineyards. Now our flesh is as the flesh of our brothers and our children as their children. And yet we are forcing our sons and our daughters to be slaves. Some of our daughters have already been enslaved, but it is not in our power to help it. For other men have our fields and our vineyards. So Nehemiah is going to learn a very important lesson. He's going to learn that we can either live from division or vision. That's it. You get one of those two things. You either get vision or you have division. Nehemiah's got this vision that the people can come together and they can do something that is going to last for generations to come in rebuilding these walls around the city to protect the people and to honor God's name. Now, listen, Nehemiah could have kept his cushy job, but if he had kept his cushy job in Persia, would we ever know his name? No. We would have never heard of him. But instead, he chose to live out a risky adventure step that God was calling him to, and he's willing to listen and hear God's voice. What happens in chapter 5 is that the people would go out, they were working on the walls, and because of that, they weren't growing their own crops. And in not growing their own crops, which was kind of okay because there was a famine in the land anyway, which, you know, the weather wasn't cooperating for them to raise crops, and then they were having to pay taxes to the king of Persia for their land and all those kinds of things as well. And so finally what people had to do is they had to mortgage their farms. And then it got worse. And they didn't just have to mortgage their farms, they had to mortgage their families. So they mortgaged their children against the ability to get grain from this group of people called the noblemen. Now the noblemen, what they did, even though they were Hebrews, they raised the price of grain four times, five times as much as it should have been. And so eventually what happens is the noblemen, because people can't pay, they foreclose. They foreclose on people's farms, but they also foreclose on their families. And so they enslaved their own Hebrew brothers and sisters' children. And so eventually the people who are working on the walls come to Nehemiah and they're like, Nehemiah, we quit, man. We're done. What good is it for us to have walls if we don't have our kids? If we don't have our families? And all of a sudden you realize that the green monster, right, that greed is killing the vision. And I would say as we think about our own lives, there are really, at a heart level, there are two financial problems. Two tough things financially that they were dealing with that we have to deal with. And the first one is comparison. Comparison, what it does is it really, comparison minimizes our view. There was a study that came out of MIT about 10 or 15 years ago, and they studied Olympic athletes. The only ones they studied were the ones on the podium, gold, silver, and bronze. They said the most satisfied athletes, you would guess that, right, are the gold medal winners, most. What was interesting is who was second in terms of the level of satisfaction. Because I would think it would be the silver, right? No. The second most satisfied people on the podium were the bronze. Because the folks who won the bronze were like, man, I'm so glad I got to be up here. I got to be on the podium. I got to make it. You know the most dissatisfied people were? The people who won the silver. They couldn't be happy because all they could do was compare themselves to the people who won the gold and thought about what could have been and maybe in their mind should have been if they would have done this or this or maybe this thing happened in the middle of the competition. And comparison killed their joy. And for you and me, if we're not careful, the same thing will happen to us. Comparison will kill our joy. You'll compare yourself to somebody else's house. You'll compare yourself to somebody else's automobile. You'll compare yourself to somebody else's career, somebody else's vacation, the level of somebody else's happiness on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, which isn't real, by the way. You'll compare yourself to that, and we're not as happy as they are because we don't have X, Y, or Z. And comparison has the potential to kill your joy. Why do you compare your reality to somebody else's unreality? It just doesn't make sense, does it? And yet we do it. Let me give you a different comparison. I want to flip your comparison a little bit. Did you know that if you earn more than $32,400 a year, you are in the top 1% of income earners in the world? Compare yourself. Don't just compare yourself to your neighbor across the street. If you're going to compare yourself to everybody. anything more than $32,400 a year, you are in the top 1% of income earners in the world. And the reason I say that to you is just I want you to realize, and I want to remind myself how blessed you really are. Think about the ways that God has blessed you. And then from that, he asks you and he asks me to live in generosity. So comparison minimizes our view. But the secondly, I think ownership maximizes our view. If I were to ask you right now, think about the three most valuable things you own. Just kind of list them in your mind. Three most valuable things that you own. It's a trick question. Because if you're a Christian, you know what? You don't own anything. God gives you everything that you have, right? God has placed everything that you have in your hands. We look at God as God is our provider. What does that mean? That means God doesn't give me anything as an owner. It means that I'm a steward of the things that God has given me. I'm a manager of the things that God has put in my hands. So I use them to extend God's kingdom as much as I can see in the world. So the great thing about that is it helps us because it flips the question. So many times when we talk about generosity and things, people will ask me, well, how much do I have to give? But that flips the question. Really, the question is, how much do you feel like you can keep? Because it's all God's. So God has blessed you with 100% of what you have so that you can be a blessing to the nations, just like Nehemiah was with his people, so that you can just be a conduit through which God's blessings flow into and out of your life. That's important because Jesus said, where your treasure is, that's where your heart is. So what you give to the most and what you invest in the most, that is the thing that represents your heart's desire. So out of that, I'll give you two suggestions. Number one, teach your kids to be generous at a young age. When your kid has a job, when they get their first job, teach them to give back to God. When I was a little kid, my first job was catching minnows in Buffalo Creek. I'd set these little minnow traps, and for a dozen minnows, I got 10 cents at the pay lake, right? I'd take them down to Buffalo Lake and sell them, and my parents taught me at a very young age. For every 10 cents I got for a dozen, I gave one penny back to God through my local church. It's called tithing. Tithing's a biblical word that means one-tenth. Teach your kids from a young age to be generous. The Build magazines that you see out in the lobby and on the bistro tables, I would encourage you, grab one of those. There are devotionals that have been written specifically for you and your kids to go through every week. Your child, if they were here last week, they were given a 10 from LifePoint Kids to collect change and money over the next few weeks so they can be part of this generosity initiative as well. Don't let them grow up, right, and not understand what it's like to just be a taker, but we want to teach our children to be givers. That's number one. Secondly, develop a vision for what you want to give. You have vision for other areas of your life, right? You have vision for what you want your career to look like. You have vision for what you want your relationships to look like. Develop a vision for what you want to give. We've had a generosity initiative that we did a few years ago, and I think back about how people sacrifice. We have people who put off remodeling their house for 2 years so they could be part of sacrificing to give generously to that vision. We've had people who've put off retirement. They've worked a couple of extra years so that they could generously sacrifice and give towards the vision that God has given us. I told you at that time 3 years ago when we started that Move 321 vision that Angie and I were praying towards doubling our tithing over the next couple of years. I didn't know how God would do it. And I'll tell you, looking back on that experience now, we almost made it. We came really, really close. And you'd say, well, you didn't make it. No, I believe we lived in generosity. We saw God meet needs in our family in incredible, miraculous ways over those 2 years. And I would just ask you, begin to pray and develop a vision, not for what you're gonna do with what you keep, but for what you're gonna do with what God has put in your hands for what you wanna give. Don't allow the green monster of greed to kill your vision. Here's how he handled opposition in chapter 5, verse 6. And I was very angry when I heard their outcry and these words. I took counsel with myself. That's, by the way, just stop right there. That's a great way to handle anger, by the way. When you get angry, stop, take a minute, take counsel with yourself. And he says, I brought charges against the nobles and the officials, and I said to them, you are exacting interest each from his brother. And they held a great assembly against them and said to them, "We, as far as we are able, have bought back our Jewish brothers who have been sold to the nations, but you even sell your brothers that they may be sold to us?" They were silent and could not find a word to say. So I said, "The thing that you are doing is not good. Ought you not to walk in the fear of God to prevent the taunts of the nations, our enemies? Moreover, I and my brothers and my servants are lending them money and grain. Let us abandon this exacting of interest." And all the assembly said, "Amen," and praised the Lord, and the people did as they had promised. This is a turning point in Hebrew history. Nehemiah looks at the nobleman and he says, "I can't believe what you're doing. You've jacked the price up on grain so much that you're plucking interest off people's lives. These are your brothers and your sisters to the degree that you're enslaving their children." I mean, they were violating numerous laws, Leviticus chapter 25, Exodus chapter 23. And Nehemiah says to them, what you need to do is you need to repent of that and live in generosity. Because Nehemiah understood that in the history of Israel moving forward, something had to be done. And this was the moment. I'm going to show you a picture up here behind me of a wall. That's Nehemiah's wall today. Now I want you to think about this moment in Hebrew history. These people came together, sacrificed to live in generosity, and they built something that has lasted for 3,000 years. What else can you be part of? What else can you invest in that's going to last, humanly speaking, for 3,000 years? I believe this vision that God has given us will give us the opportunity to impact generations and generations for centuries into the future. I believe the next 2 years will affect the next 200 years of our county as we think about our three vision handles. I told them to you last week: neighbors, nations, and next generations. Today, I want to talk to you just for a second about our neighbors. I just want to focus on that for a minute. When I think about our neighbors, just like Nehemiah did, when he put the people on the wall, Nehemiah placed people by their homes because he knew people would sacrifice for their houses and for their families. And so when I think about our neighbors, that's the first thing I tend to think about is our families. I'm so grateful for what God is doing in the context of our LifePoint students ministry. I think this past year we took 80 students to camp, and last year we had about 150 students at C3 weekend. And I don't know about you, but for me, when I was young, getting away for a solid week where I could focus on my relationship with God helped move me forward spiritually in some incredible ways. When I would take a weekend in college and get away and go and just focus, and I want you to think about kids today, how much they're bombarded even more than we were with messaging and social media and all those kinds of things. Man, the opportunity to get kids away, it's incredible. And we have an incredible team as well of students, of student leaders who are pouring into your kids. They're coming to ball games and recitals and events, and they're hopefully texting your kids during the week who are part of their small group. And I'm so grateful for our leaders who are ministering and pouring into the lives of our students. You're like, "Well, Dean, how do we see that working in the future? I don't know how much you know about what's going to happen right around here." So I'm going to take a minute and just tell you as much as I can, as quickly as I can, about what's going on. You know, this road out here is Graphics Way, right? It runs all the way from Orange Road down by the post office all the way, and it stops right here by our new property. Well, Graphics Way in the next couple of years will be finished all the way up north to Home Road. Now, the reason that's a big deal is because right now, Home Road, coming from the west side of the county, right, all the way over there, it hits 23 and it stubs right there. By this time, next year, with the end of next football season, Home Road will be completed on the east side of 23 all the way to the railroad tracks. I'll show you a picture of what that's going to look like, how it's going to swing south. And the reason I show you that picture is because what you see right there is you see a development of condos and homes in the middle that's going to be built by the Schottenstein family. There's another neighborhood that you really can't see well on that picture. And then across the road, across 23, there's going to be another neighborhood of homes that's going to be in, such that in the not too distant future, from the property right over there where our new facility will be, you will be able to visibly see 465 new housing units. You'll be able to see them that don't exist today. The Regional Planning Commission from Delaware County says in the preliminary list, the yet to be built and the ready to be built list in Delaware County, there are 5,737 new housing units that are ready to go, on the books, ready to go. And the majority of those are in exist or will exist within a 5-mile radius of our new property. And I just say all that to say this to you. There's a lot of times people come to LifePoint, they walk around and they're like, you know what? Man, do you really need me? I mean, it seems like things are functioning well. I see lots of people with red t-shirts on and LifePoint Kids t-shirt. I would just say what we believe and what we see, the people that God is bringing to South Delaware County that we get to be part of reaching, we need you now more than we have ever, ever needed you. Because here's what's going to happen. The funding at the state level is being worked to put a bridge across the railroad tracks there at the east end of Home Road, what will be the east end of Home Road. So you'll cross that bridge and you'll go up, and Home Road's gonna connect to Lewis Center Road. And you know Lewis Center Road, if you go east, you're gonna cross South Old State, right? And then you're gonna go down by the southern part of the dam where the dam steps are, and you're gonna cross up, you're gonna go over Africa Road, and then Lewis Center becomes Big Walnut. You crest the hill and you come down and you go under Route 71. The state of Ohio already owns the easements of the land there around Big Walnut and 71, and that's gonna be the newest interchange on 71. That'll be the interchange that's between Polaris and Gemini and 3637. So just think about that for a minute. For the first time in the history of Delaware County, there's gonna be a road that connects the east side of the county to the west side of the county. Home Road will connect all the way across our county. Projections are somewhere in the neighborhood of 20,000 cars a day eventually will drive Home Road east and west. Now, right in front of our property is already Route 23, right? That's over 50,000 cars a day. So I want you to think about the magnitude of what God's put in front of us for just a second. 50,000 cars a day going north-south, 20,000 cars a day going east-west. God is bringing 70,000 vehicles a day within eyesight of our new facility right over here to bring people to himself. You think it's for transportation. You think God's just trying, or people are trying to make the roads better. Not at all, not at all. God's bringing two roads together to bring people to himself in the context of the land and the facility that he has given to us. Not only that, we have the opportunity right now to build a Habitat for Humanity house for one of our LifePoint members, Emma and her two children. God brought them across the ocean. They immigrated here to the United States. There's been a small group of folks who've been encouraging them for the past couple of years, her and her children. And now we all have the opportunity to jump in and to help build her Habitat for Humanity home. Next Sunday, there's a Habitat for Humanity, about a 45-minute long orientation that's gonna take place here. You can look at it, you see the details in the listening guide. You can go to the app under events, scroll down and register to be part of that 45-minute orientation. And you can actually go begin work on that Habitat for Humanity home now for one of our members. It's unbelievable the opportunities that God is bringing to us to reach our neighbors. But just like I said to you last week, it's gonna take all of us living together in generosity. It's gonna take all of us taking steps together. For the next 2 years, our normal budget, I said this to you last week, would be about $6 million. We have $3 million or so a year. That's our annual budget. But for us to do everything that we believe God wants us to do, neighbors, nations, and next generations, would mean we'd have to stretch to about $8 million. And so on the one hand, some of you hear that number and you're like, oh man, that seems like a huge number. But the good news is that, well, it's even better news than last week. Some of our leaders, we've asked them to commit to this vision early. We believe leaders go first. And that number's crept up even a little more this week. So we're 43% of the way there. We're almost halfway to that goal already. But it's gonna take all of us living in generosity. It's gonna take all of us taking steps together. So that's the good news. But the tough news I shared with you last week is that 60% of the people here at Lewis Center give 100% of the offerings. So we need 100% of us taking steps forward in generosity towards seeing this vision come to bear. And that's gonna happen in a lot of different ways. For some of you, you're gonna go from not giving to giving. And that's gonna look like giving up Starbucks a couple times a week. It's going to look like giving up lunch a couple of times a week, maybe out over the next couple of years. Maybe for some of you, you would say, you know what, Dean, what I want to know is what would it cost? What would it cost to cover my seat? Maybe that's the way you think about it, and that's helpful to you. I'll tell you, in the new facility, every chair, if you cost that out over the cost of the project, every seat's about $8,600, $8,633. So maybe you'd say, you know what, for the next 2 years, what I want to do is I want to give towards my seat and my spouse's seat, or my family's seats. Or maybe you say, you know what, I want to cover the cost of a seat for somebody who's not here yet that God is gonna bring. Maybe that's a step that you want to take. I don't know how it's gonna work out in you, but I believe the opportunity that we have is both God-sized, and it's absolutely that God can accomplish it through us, through his people. And I invite you to be part of it. Not because we're trying to raise funds, right? If we get to the end of this process and we raise all the funds that we need, but we don't take steps, we failed. If we all take the steps that we need to take to become the kinds of generous people that we need to become, the goal, all that kind of stuff, all that'll take care of itself. I think about Patrick and Danielle. And 8 years ago, 9 years ago, they were in debt, tens of thousands of dollars in school loan debt. And one day Patrick comes home and he says to Danielle, he says, I think we need to start contributing at church. And she looks at him and she says, I think you're nuts. There's no way. And he said, I really think we do. So they prayed about it together and they started giving. They started giving 1%. And at the same time, they started knocking out debt every chance they got. And every time they paid something off, they paid a debt off, they increased their percentage of giving, trying to get to tithing, towards giving 10%. And over 3.5 years, what happened is kind of this. And at the end of 3.5 years, they paid off all of their school loans and they were tithing. And I'll use the word that they used about that. They said, we felt like we were free. Like we were free to give and participate in ways that we'd never been able to before. Because when I'm making that ask of you, I understand the question you're asking is it worth it? And I would tell you, I believe it is. I mentioned to you that we shared this vision with our leaders. When we shared this vision with our leaders, we asked them, we said, hey, just share with us something that maybe God has done in your life through our church. And we just kind of went around the room. And as we did, the stories, one gentleman stood up and he said, you know, a decade ago, he said, my wife had left me, my kids were gone, I lost my job. He said, it was the darkest moment of my life. And that's when I found LifePoint. Now, I understood what he meant by that, which was not that LifePoint changed his life, but that God changed his life. There are a lot of great churches in the world. We're grateful to be a church that gets to participate in God's activity, but we got to be the church in the moment that he needed it the most. Another couple, we got around to them. The husband stood up. The husband said, you know what, if it wasn't for LifePoint and where we were when we came here, we would be divorced, for sure. We'd be divorced today. We did that a couple of years ago. Over the next couple of weeks, one of the things, by the way, that I want to do is I want to share with you just a few of my favorite moments in LifePoint's history. And this is one of my favorite moments. When we did this a few years ago with our leaders, it was connected to a vision called Move 321. We went around the room, and what the question kind of devolved into that night was, how did you come to LifePoint? I don't know how it got there, but that's how it came. And so as we went around the room, people would talk about their first experience coming to LifePoint. And our staff team was there. John was there with us that night. John, who leads worship, was there. And so a few times when we got around, they were like, well, I came and the first thing, the music was loud and you know, everybody would chuckle in the room. And it happened a few different times. And finally, we got around in the room to Tom Bill. Tom's on our parking team, leads a life group sometimes for us, does a great job. We got around to Tom and Tom said, you know what? My favorite moment at LifePoint, it happened, he said, a while back whenever we were singing on Sunday morning, and he said, I've got a son who's shy. And I know a son. I've known a son since he was really a little guy, and he's just quiet. Man, just never hardly says a word. And he said, in the middle of worship that Sunday morning, he said, I heard something. And he said, all of a sudden, I recognized that. Is that my son? And he said, I turned and I looked at my son. And he said, my quiet, shy son has his eyes closed and his hands up. And he's singing like loud to the top of his lungs because the music was loud enough that nobody around him could hear him. And he just felt free to sing. And then Tom says, he says, if I close my eyes right now, I can still hear him singing. Tom's crying. I'm crying right up there trying to navigate the conversations that are going on as we go around the room. And Tom opens his eyes and he looks across the room at John. And he says, John, keep a few loud moments in there every Sunday for quiet, shy sons like mine. Is it worth it? You better believe it's worth it. Listen, we cannot leave our neighbors hanging. The people that God is bringing to our city and our county and our 43035 right around here, God is bringing people to us for the purpose of seeing them step into his kingdom and shine his glory to the world. All that I'm asking you to do, I asked you last week, I'll ask you again this week, as you leave today, on bistro tables outside the doors, there's a commitment card that looks like this. I'm not asking you to give anything today. I'm asking you to take this card home and just start to pray and ask God how he wants you to be part of this vision. And then on the 24th, not next Sunday, but the Sunday after that on the 24th, we will all come together on that Sunday. And by the way, do not miss the 24th. There are some next generation opportunities that are gonna happen on the 24th. Just do not miss the 24th. It's gonna be a great Sunday. We'll all make our commitments together on that Sunday. I'm gonna throw this commitment card up there. I don't want it to be confusing for you. But as you look at that commitment card, the middle part of that is just the how. That's how you would choose to give, whether that's weekly, biweekly, monthly, annually, that's just the how. But the big box over there on the right represents your total commitment to give to LifePoint over the next couple of years. I know sometimes people have been in churches before and they've done like a building fund, and that's not this. This is everything we're giving to, budget everything over the next 2 years. These neighbors, nations, next generations, think of it like 3, 2, 1. Three initiatives over the next 2 years supported by one vision, one budget. So the way I said it last week was, if you're already giving $10,000 a year towards the ministries of LifePoint, that counts. So over 2 years, right, that would be about $20,000. And then if you can take a $5,000 generosity step, great. That would be a total of $25,000. That's what goes in that box, the big box. Smaller box down there in the right-hand corner is if you would like to give some of that before the end of the year for tax purposes, you can just write that amount in there into that box. You see, why would we do that? Why would we sacrifice in those ways? It's really, I know it feels complicated, but it's really simple. Because we have a generous God who sacrificed for us. The scriptures say about Jesus that he who was rich, eternally wealthy, Jesus, owner of everything in the universe, he who was rich became poor. He became one of us. He who was rich became poor. Why would he do that? So that you and I who were poor, poor spiritually, might be made rich. Eternally wealthy in that we are co-heirs with Christ and all that he has, but eternally wealthy in that we have a relationship with God and the assurance of being with him forever. Can I just tell you today that if you're a Christian, if you're a believer, if you're a Christ follower, you are eternally wealthy. So to sacrifice for a few years down here for the sake of other people experiencing what you have experienced in relationship with God, is no big thing. I want you to know that I'm praying for you. I'm praying for you because I'm naive to think, and you're naive to think, that you're not going to experience some opposition. But I'm also praying for you that we as a church, I'm not the church, our staff team is not the church. We are the body of Christ. That we will come together, this local body called Life Point, to sacrifice, to live in generosity, to see the next 200 years changed in our community. Let's pray together. God, thank you for the opportunity that you've put in front of us. And God, for us as humans, it's not easy. For us as humans, we don't have all the answers, and we certainly, God, struggle to figure out the hows of everything. But at the same time, God, it is a joy. It's a joy to live in ways that we see you meet our needs in ways that we, God, can't make that happen on our own. To shed aside worry and to shed aside the feeling that it all depends, God, on us when we live dependently on you. So God, I pray for us as we head towards the 24th. I pray, God, for us, God, as a church family, as we seek to make a difference in neighbors, nations, and next generations. And God, I pray for anyone who's here today who does not have a relationship with you, that today, God, maybe you've spoken to them out of your generosity, your life given for them on the cross, that today would be the day, God, that they respond to that and live in it.